Welcome to the OFD podcast. I am your host, Joshua Voles, site manager at onefootdown.com on the SB Nation Network. And I'm flying a little solo tonight. I don't have Jude. He was otherwise occupied, I believe, at a county fair. It is either trapped in a Ferris wheel or dealing with a crying kid because they don't have a stuffed animal. But I do have a special guest tonight, Tyler James of the South Bend Tribune, Notre Dame Insider. Tyler, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here. I do not have any screaming children or anything to offer or any condolences to offer to Jude. I'm upset with him for not being here.
Yeah, well, he wanted to be here, and he said, man, I'm going to try to make it. So maybe at one point he'll be knocking on the internet door saying, let me in. So maybe we can sneak him in.
All right, not a lot.
But you're still a youngin' anyways, man. You're not even – what'd you just turn, 25 the other day?
No, I turned 30. Hit the big 30.
Oh, that's right. You haven't quite got to – this is like a podcast tradition. I am 40 years old. And Jude just steps into the podcast as soon as I say I am 40 years old. Jude, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Can you hear me okay?
I just made up all sorts of excuses for you not being here.
I lost track of the time. I was reading Tyler James articles in the ND Insider magazine. So
look at you kissing up to the guest.
That's my excuse.
We're not even a minute and a half in.
Let's not tell him that I ripped him just a minute ago. All right.
Yeah. Well, he refuses to listen to the podcast because he doesn't like the sound of his own voice. So he won't know anything about it. So we are on here tonight to talk some Notre Dame football. Tyler just got done with his first year on the full-on football beat. He was the recruiting guy, the Indy Insider, for a long time. And our friend Carter Carls, who has the worst food takes in America, took over for him. And Tyler took Mike Rell's spot. So, Tyler, let me just ask you real quick. How did last year go for you? I mean, the year you got hired, the first year you got hired was in 2012, right? Undefeated season?
That's correct, yeah.
So when are you taking over for Hanson?
I can't take over for Eric Hanson, but yeah, it's kind of funny that the years that my roles have changed, that the seasons have gone really well for Notre Dame. So maybe we can find a way for me to do something a little bit different this year to help out Notre Dame's causes for you guys.
Now, the first year I started writing about Notre Dame football was in 2007.
All right.
And the first year that I took over at One Foot Down was 2016. So I don't have a very good track record. I'm going to have to just stay put and just keep doing this.
Yeah, you got the opposite thing going for you.
So how was it last year doing that full time? Was there a whole lot of any bit of surprise for you you've been doing it. You've been covering Notre Dame one way or the other for a while anyways, but, was there anything that kind of jumped out at you? Like, whoa.
The amount of travel last year certainly jumped out at me. That was an interesting year to,
y'all wrote about it
to join the beat with having to go to California twice and New York and being in Chicago. It was certainly fun. By the end of the year, it's like, okay, I need a little bit of a break here. And then certainly we packed up and headed down to Dallas for the Cotton Bowl, but it was a fun time. Certainly, surprising how it went in a number of ways, probably most, at least from my viewpoint with Ian Book, most importantly, but it was fun just kind of taking on a different role, different challenges of writing more about football on a daily basis and trying to find some different stories to cover, which I really enjoyed. I got to do some silly stuff talking about, doing a story about the game that they played in the locker room, which they called Knockout, and, talking to Khalid Kareem about his, the crazy eye black that he wears, and just kind of small stuff like that, which I think we kind of we all notice and maybe run across, but to get a little bit more information and kind of understand the motivations and the stuff those guys do off the field is kind of fun too.
Well, that's the stuff I enjoy. I'm a spectacle kind of guy.
You also wrote the definitive BK homeboy story. Let's not sell that short.
Yeah,
let's not sell that short. That's a key one right there.
Yeah, I got the boots on the ground and started talking to the sources of the ND Twitterati and the meme lords and make sure their voices were heard.
You know, I'm glad you brought up boots because that whole hashtag BK homeboy, that was dope and all. But I just think people forget about Sun Bowl Brian Kelly. And, you weren't on the beat yet, but I mean, I am literally staring at screenshots on my computer right now as we speak of some, because I use them all the time. Brian Kelly in a sombrero, arms up, and I mean, dude is fantastic, and his cowboy boots in his hotel room. I mean, I think we're all missing out on a key piece of Notre Dame history, and we might have to do a definitive Brian Kelly fashion article.
Yeah, well, you need an anniversary. You got to wait like 10 years to do a 10-year oral history of it. The Athletic might be all over that.
Yeah, the Athletic would be. Pete will beat me to it. The inside joke right now is that we've had like three stories in the works in the background, and Samson has beat us to the punch on each one of those three. I was like, what the hell? It's like, all right.
He's got a mole somewhere. Someone's spilling secrets.
I know. We're gonna have to find that out. So heading into 2019 now, I just want to talk a little bit about what are your overall thoughts about this team, just personnel wise, and heading into, you know, we're gonna be heading into fall camp here soon.
Yeah, we got to see a lot of actual practice this spring, so that was informative. But I think the biggest things that were takeaways is that there's not really clear answers at linebacker and at special teams. And I know it might seem like we're nitpicking there by just focusing on some of the negatives and maybe not trusting that Notre Dame is going to be able to have a solution by the start of the season. But it was just kind of jarring to see, all right, they're still definitely working through this, and they have ways to go. I think certainly we hear a lot in the spring about, oh, nothing is for certain, that we're not going to name starters at certain positions. But you get a pretty good sense of how things are going to play out from different things you can observe. And then some of that usually gets confirmed pretty quickly in preseason camp. But I just think that there's going to be a lot to watch, and a lot for Clark Lee to figure out when it comes to linebackers, Brian Pulliam to figure out when it comes to kicking game with the punters and field goal kickers. So I'm fascinated to see how that plays out. But I think Notre Dame should be in pretty good shape at most other places. I liked what I saw from the young receivers in the spring. I'm pretty confident that Chase Claypool will be a very good number one receiver. Chris Fink will certainly be a steady guy that I think can help out and maybe do some more, expand his game a little bit more, maybe even play outside of the slot at times. I'm kind of curious to see that. Notre Dame certainly hasn't discussed that publicly, but I would, especially from when I saw Lawrence Keys, I'd love to see Lawrence Keys in the slot and maybe Chris Fink out wide every once in a while just to throw a different look at defenses. And I think Ian Book is going to find a way to improve, though that has been difficult for Notre Dame quarterbacks to do after a first year as a starter. So I think that offense should be in good shape. The offensive line, I think, will improve. I like some of the older guys continuing to develop there. Although I don't think Tommy Kramer is a preseason All-American, despite some lazy research done by many national writers. But I think that
he was a 5-star and he's a senior now, Tyler. Yeah. That's and all you need to know.
And he's played before, but
he's played quite a few years now. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, I like Tommy Kramer. He's just, I just take everything a little bit less seriously if I see someone has put that on record. So Tommy can improve and play that way, but certainly going into the season, I think it's silly to have him in that discussion. Go ahead.
Now, injury aside here, do you think Kramer's kind of entering like Alex Barr's territory where, you know, Alex Barr's was playing excellent football last year, up until he got injured. I mean, he had really, in my eyes, had stepped up to his game and had earned, he had gotten a few preseason nods that probably weren't quite, you know, he probably wasn't deserving of them as yet, but then he had proved it, you know, at the start of the season last year. Do you think Kramer's kind of projecting that way? I mean, we're kind of chuckling about the preseason All-American kind of a stuff because, you know, we pay closer attention to than the national media.
Right.
But do you think he's projecting towards, like, you know, an Alex Barr season, injury aside?
It could be. I think I was probably more comfortable going into last season predicting that for Alex Barr than I would be right now for Tommy Kramer, though I did think he looked better in the spring. I think he just needs to continue to improve and be better on his feet. I know that's something he worked on, being a better puller, especially at the guard position is imperative. So I just think he's got to keep working to get to that level. Not that he can't, but I just think that some of the, it's just kind of funny to me to see his name pop up there when I don't know that many people would say he's Notre Dame's best offensive lineman going into the season at this point. So I'm curious to see how that plays out. I think Aaron Banks, though he's dealing with a foot injury, has a very bright future. Will be interesting to see how he's doing when it comes to preseason camp and how much he is slowed by that foot injury. And then I'm looking at Liam Eichenberg as a guy to have a big improvement this year. And I think Robert Hainsey coming into the season healthy, though he had that camp injury that I think really hurt him at the beginning of the season, that prevented him from maybe playing to his potential last year. So I think all those guys have passed to improvement on the offensive line. And so I think there's reason to be excited for what this offense can do.
Now, one name that you didn't mention was Jarrett Patterson. And if you did, I must have blacked out. But Jude and I have had this discussion before about, in my eyes, and it's kind of ridiculous. It's a ridiculous statement. It really is. I think Notre Dame actually improves a little bit because I thought Mustafa had dropped off quite a bit in 2018 from 2017, just in his play. But leadership wise and calling the different line audibles and all that, who takes over there along the offensive line? Does that really get put all on Patterson, or is that gonna be something that Tommy Kramer or Hainsey or Eichenberg is able to help do? The line calls there.
Yeah, I think they'll probably share that, and I think having Jarrett go through spring practice essentially as the starting center, which is kind of rare that coming into the spring he hadn't played center before. They kind of let him know in winter workouts that would be something he would be doing.
Oh, they sold it. I mean, they're like, this is how it's going to be.
Right.
I didn't see that one coming at all. I mean, that kind of came out of the woodworks. They're like, what? Like, all right.
Yeah. But I think he was able to work with his offensive lineman and I think build some chemistry there, which sometimes that doesn't necessarily get to happen until late in preseason camp, because you're kind of working out who's going to be the starters. And I think they have a pretty set lineup, though. There's certainly guys that can rotate in on the offensive line. So I think that's beneficial. I think one thing I'd like to mention, when Sam Mustafer, although I don't think he played great last season, but he had to play with four different guards last year. He was playing next to different guys all the time. Right. So that isn't the easiest thing, whether he would be willing to admit that or not. I probably doubt it. He's not going to blame anyone else for anything. But
right.
When you lose Alex Barrs next to you, Tommy Kramer gets out of the lineup. You got Trevor Rulon and Aaron Banks coming in. That's not an easy situation to handle for a center. So I do think Jarrett's probably a better athlete than Sam Mustafer is. It'll be fascinating to see how he handles the leadership responsibilities and the knowledge of the offense. Everything that we've heard is positive in those regards. So I think he will certainly be an important figure in making sure that offensive line does improve if it's going to.
Tyler, I had a question. If I recall correctly, you were an offensive lineman in a former life. Is that correct?
That is correct. I played all across the offensive line. I played in high school, and I played 1 year at a Division III school.
Perfect. So tell me the difficulty in learning how to snap the ball and then get yourself in a position where the nose tackle isn't just on you automatically as soon as you get back up into your stance. Is it difficult to learn how to snap and then protect yourself?
Yeah, well, you kind of have to piece it together. First, you got to learn how to snap, and then you got to learn to get ready for the guy to hit you. So I think probably in the winter workouts is when he was able to work on the snaps and get comfortable with that. But then it's a whole different ballgame when you're talking about live guys coming at you and not caring that you're snapping the ball. They're trying to get through you regardless. So it is a bit difficult, and I think it takes a lot of practice and getting used to, and it certainly takes some help from your fellow guards to be in positions to help you if you're in a tough spot. So I think that he seemed to have handled that pretty well. We didn't really get to talk to him about what those challenges were like for him and how comfortable he feels there. But I think also having a guy like Trevor Rulon on the team who could kind of guide him through that and help teach him, though Trevor hasn't played a lot of center in the starting lineup at Notre Dame, he was a backup behind Sam Mustafer for a while. So he kind of knows the ins and outs of the position and can help him along with that. So I think that he should be in a good spot. I think it's certainly different with it makes it a little bit easier that most of the snaps are shotgun. He's not doing a lot of back and forth between under center and shotgun, so he can kind of get in a little bit of a rhythm there. And I think that he should be fine. I don't remember noticing many snapping issues with him. There were more issues with some of the backups with snapping at center in the spring from my memory. So I think he seemed to have acquitted himself nicely to the transition and figured things out with playing center.
Is it possible that one of the byproducts of having a new center and breaking in a guy for the first time will be more false starts penalties? Would that be fair that the rhythm might be thrown by one guy who's new to snapping?
It could be. It depends. I guess I'm not terribly familiar with the different cadences that Notre Dame runs and what they do on silent counts and stuff like that. So I wouldn't have total knowledge of how that would totally affect that. It's something that probably worth looking into and during preseason camp and asking the guys about. But I think that it's more on the tackles just to be aware of what's going on inside, because usually the tackles are the guys that ended up false starting the most because they're the most worried about the super fast defensive ends getting by them. So I think that's where those issues will come. But yeah, I think that's a good question. I think there is a chance that could happen if he doesn't snap it when they think he's going to snap it, even if it's a slight second difference. I think that could make a difference.
I could see that being a tremendous problem in, say, Athens, Georgia.
Sure.
Are you trying to tell me something, Jude?
I'm just still telling you that I'm very concerned about that game. I think I've been on record for several weeks about that. So.
I never said I wasn't concerned.
No, I'm not trying to diminish your position. I'm just.
But I have a game plan, and I slipped Brian Kelly a memory stick. So I think we're good. I think we're really good.
Okay.
Awesome. All right. Tyler, like we said earlier, is the football beat writer there at the South Bend Tribune. He works with Eric Hansen and Carter Carls and Tom Noy. And they had just he just got off vacation. Why? Because they just put in a ton of work putting together this awesome 96-page Notre Dame season preview. Tyler, do it justice, man. Talk about the preview. I put up an article the other day, and I'm blown away by, you know, especially a lot of the features. I thought it was great that Eric got Brian Kelly to talk about #BKHomeboy. you know, and I mean, there's just a lot of good stuff in there. Let me do this. Talk about that preview.
Tyler, before you start, tell us where we can actually buy a copy. I mean, Josh and I both have copies. I'm an ND Insider subscriber, so I actually got one in the mail the other day. But tell people where they can get a copy before you tell them everything that's in the copy they're about to get.
Yes, you can order a copy online at ndinsider.com/buythemag, buy BUYTHEMAG. You can get on there and order one to be shipped to you. It's $12.95, which includes shipping. It will show up to your address, and you'll have plenty of reading ahead of you, and you'll be a smarter football fan for it. But yeah, I think
we'll include the link for the mag inside the podcast notes and on the post on the page too as well. So we're making this super easy for you guys to get this great piece of literature.
Yeah, and as Jude mentioned, if you are an ND Insider premium subscriber, that gives you the rights to a free magazine. So we sent everyone that was a previous subscriber a magazine out, and sounds like they've made it out that way. So Jude got his, and we are happy to offer that to people who subscribe to us for our premium coverage. And then doing the magazine is always fun. It's a bear to do. We start doing it pretty much as spring practice starts and start thinking about what we want to do and start working on some of the position previews and analysis that we do with each position group. And then once spring wraps up, we start focusing on those features. Like you mentioned, this year, our cover stories on Julian Aquara. I was able to spend some time with him and talk to his mother and his older brother, Romeo, and Mike Elston for quite some time about various things. And he has certainly some high expectations for this season that I thought were interesting. And got a little bit more information. I didn't feel like I knew a lot about his childhood growing up, and coming from Nigeria over to to Charlotte, where he moved with his mother, and moving over to America. I thought that was kind of interesting to get to know a little bit. He actually went back to Nigeria for the first time since he moved to America. This past summer was his first time going back, so that was kind of cool to talk to him about that experience. And then we have some other features. Eric has a feature on Chase Claypool. I'm certainly expecting a big season for him. Eric also did a story on five-star safety Kyle Hamilton, the big-time recruit in the incoming freshman class, and what he is about and how he's kind of different than what you would expect from most five-star recruits. I have a story I did on Ian Book. I actually posted it today on ndinsider.com for our premium subscribers on Ian Book and Tommy Reese and their relationship. I got to spend some time with them in the film room for a little bit. They reviewed some blue gold game footage for me. So that was kind of cool to kind of get that experience and kind of see how they handle that and what they do on a daily basis throughout the season when they're reviewing film and stuff like that. And how they expect to improve this season. We also have a story on Lance Taylor, Notre Dame's new running backs coach. We were able to do the first interview with him since he came to Notre Dame. It was a bit of a delay, but we were able to get that in for the magazine. So that was kind of cool that we were allowed to do that. I also did a story on Mike Elston, and how he's evolved the defensive line into being a strength of the program right now. Carter Carl's big recruiting feature is on Notre Dame's quarterback recruiting and sort of how that's changed and the emphasis on accuracy that Chip Long and Tommy Reese are looking for when they're out recruiting quarterbacks. So, and then we have the usual staples, the freshman profiles, the recruiting roundtable, the breakdowns of every position. We have predictions for the upcoming season. So previews of every opponent. I actually did those this year for the first time.
So you're the one who picked Michigan to be.
Yes. I'm the guilty party there.
You are on. We're not friends.
I'm on your list.
You know what's funny is you brought up our new running backs coach, and I was in a frantic panic and DM'd Michael Birch the other day because apparently Notre Dame's like changing their entire website, and I had no idea.
Sure.
So I'm doing these coaches' profiles and all that, and I go to look them up, and I'm 404'd. I'm like, oh, what happened now? You know, I'm like, what? Can we just go through a nice stretch of nothing? So I DM Birch. I'm like, hey, man, is there something we should know or is there something going on? He's just like, thank you so much for making this private. No. He's like, no, it's a system thing. I'm like, oh, okay.
So, that would have been bad. Starting rumors. Okay, there's a 404 here. What's going on?
I'm like, Michael Birch, explain yourself. You know, I'll tell you about those small recruiting profiles. And, you know, we cover and follow recruiting. Well, Jude really doesn't because he has to take a shower afterwards. But, you know, one of my favorite things is I don't know, maybe because I'm a dumb guy, but I like the dumb little stuff, you know, like which Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, how many times you watch Rudy. And I am shocked. How many guys each year come in that have not seen Rudy? Like, is that not somehow, like, doesn't that pique an interest at some point during the recruiting process for the 2 or 3 years? Like, maybe I should watch this. Like, I think there's like three of them on this cycle that have it. And like someone like Andrew Kristofic, I mean, he's a PA guy.
Right.
How have you not watched it?
And it seems – is Rudy on Netflix? Well, you guys would probably know better than I do. It seems like it's probably pretty ready available. I don't know.
It's not, but it is on regular cable all the time.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's kind of funny. And some guys, when we ask them that, they're like, yeah, I guess I probably should watch that. And we do those interviews usually around signing day because we do a different version of the profiles around signing day, but we do them all at once. So either in December or February. And so they may have actually seen it by the time they get to campus, but when we interviewed them, they hadn't seen it. So it's kind of funny. And you can, some guys, they don't even think twice about it. Some guys are like, you could tell they're afraid to miss it. To say like, I've seen parts of it. It's like, no, you haven't. You haven't seen any of it. You can admit it.
I got a writer on staff that, through a family member, knows the real life D Bob, and so she wanted to get a hold, get a hold and do a story, And so she messaged me and says, "Hey, I just got off the phone with D-Bob. He's actually at Rudy's house right now."
Oh, God.
And she said, "So, you know, should I do an interview with both of them? Because he mentioned, you know, maybe doing something like that." I said, "Yeah, you know, go ahead, do whatever you want. I don't care." You know, she got back with me just a couple minutes later. She goes, and D-Bob said, "Rudy doesn't do blogs."
Ooh.
Like, hey, man. Like, I wasn't asking for this.
It's too funny. My favorite response was KJ Wallace, celebrity crush. He said, "Old school Jada Pinkett Smith," and then added, "Old school, do not put new or now, or people will think I'm weird."
Like, how old school is he talking, though, is the thing.
I'm probably closer to his age than Jada Pinkett Smith must be now.
Yeah. Well, I guess he's got a point.
Tyler,
if it was Litchfield and J-Bod, though, I mean, how are you going to tell? I mean, the guy's 3 years old.
Tyler, have we finally gotten to the point where somebody's mentioned a band or a celebrity crush that you've, like, literally never heard of?
Yeah, that's how I know I'm getting older, is when they start naming either bands. I listen to rap and hip hop music, so I have a decent understanding of most of the big time current artists. But there's usually a guy or two here or there that they'll mention. I was like, I've never heard of that, and some of them usually have kind of funny names. And it's also been interesting. Some of the celebrity crushes now are kind of like almost Instagram models and that kind of thing, because that's more of like a. That's a thing now. Kids growing up are following these women on Instagram, and so they develop crushes for these people on Instagram who aren't on Instagram have no idea who they are. But
who is Summer Rae? Who is Rachel DeMita?
Yep. I think those are Instagram people.
Who's Chantel Jeffries? I don't know. I feel very old when I read this.
I mean, and then you got someone like Quinn Carroll, whose favorite musician is Johnny Cash.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's kind of funny. I have to always Google them, because I'm never for sure how to spell their name. I always want to make sure the name right. So that's how I figured out, oh, that's where that person's from, or oh, that's where that person's from. So it's kind of funny.
That's great. I really enjoy that. I think it gets their personalities. And the first one I remember, and I think you did it, was a video of Ian Book, and you asked him, "Is a hot dog as a sandwich?" And he said, "Yes, think about it." And I was like, "There's nothing to think about, son." And I brought it up with Carter, and he was like, "Yeah, no, I think everything's a sandwich." And then he proceeded to give us, like, basically the worst sandwich takes of all time on this podcast. So
not just sandwich takes. I asked him taco versus burrito, which we'll get to there, Tyler. But has that, and he went on a thing about soft tacos being open-faced burritos. Like, I can't think of a worse food hot take than that.
The disrespect that Carter Carroll's has towards food is just a mad side.
Yeah, he thinks a Pop-Tart is a sandwich too.
Yes, no, so. I see that. I just can't stand for that. That's chaos.
I mean, I get his logic. It's a simple logic, but come on.
It just reminds me of that scene in Batman where Michael Caine says, "Some men just want to watch the world burn." You know what I mean? Like, that's part of Carl's just takes on sandwiches. So.
That's right. I do have to give credit. The video with Ian Book was a Mike Varell production. He did a video. I think that was when Ian was an incoming freshman, and he did it like right when he was coming to campus. He did the video with him in person, because we used to do something called
Mike. Oh, I'm sorry.
Something we called 2-minute drills with the. We would do little video versions of – they're kind of similar to the freshman profiles, but we would do them with whoever we were doing the position feature on. And so Mike did an Ian Book one, and so he asked him about the hot dog thing. But I did go back – somehow I was doing a video on our editing system in the office, and I came across that video. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, I gotta cut this down and turn this into a clip for everyone to see, because it was pretty funny.
Yeah, because I think you shared it on Twitter, right? And then
right,
it said,
yeah.
And you had superimposed think about it, like on the bottom or something.
Yeah, I think I made it into a GIF too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do these guys got too much time in their locker room? Come on. All right. Well, hey, we're going to take a quick break here, and that we're going to come back, and we're going to probably talk some more outrageous food takes and some more about Notre Dame's key games in the upcoming season with Tyler James for South Bend Tribune. So stick around. We'll be right back. Okay. Now that we've established that Carter has no business coming back on this podcast to talk food, we're gonna get into a few things here. All right, Tyler, I ask everybody this question because I wrote an article about the Deshaun Kizer Malik Zaire battle a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I sat at my desk for about, I don't even know, an hour, trying to think of like the best way to like describe that competition that year going into 2016 without, you know, without just like the basics, everyone was talking about that, you know, that summer. And the best way I described it was taco versus burrito. And since then, really since then, I've had to ask everybody what their take is on taco versus burrito. So give me your definitive OFD official stance on where you're at.
Oh man, that's a really tough one. I think it's tough to just pick one there, but I will probably side with a burrito.
Yes,
I think
you just made Josh so happy. I can't explain.
It wins the poll every time, but like people are burrito people, team burrito, hashtag team burrito are afraid to come forward. I think because they got all these team taco people.
No, so here's my theory. Tacos are easy to make. Anyone can make a taco, so everyone makes tacos. I don't think people make burritos at home as much as people make tacos at home, so that's why they side with tacos.
I think you're right. I think burritos just sound like too much effort.
Not in this house.
Bro. I mean, I couldn't roll a burrito. I'm not a trained burrito roller, so I have to go get burritos made for me. And I had an excellent burrito out in San Diego. That was amazing. That was life changing.
I don't know what they're going to feed us down in Louisville, but when we get back to Notre Dame Stadium, I'm going to bring up some tortillas up to the press box, and I'm going to show you how to wrap a proper burrito. Nobody steals. I'm dead serious. I will put those in my briefcase, and I'll show the whole press box. Who wants to learn how to roll a burrito? Because my take on why burritos are superior to tacos is that you can make anything a burrito. I was telling Jude,
yeah, you can use the hot dogs that they serve.
I can make a peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter.
A hot dog burrito.
Man, it is such a superior way to eat food. I mean, Cholitos, I'll eat a Cholito every day during the wintertime rather than a bowl of chili. You can carry that. You're basically carrying your bowl around. It's fantastic. So.
Josh likes to ask taco versus burrito. I like to ask, who will be Notre Dame's third leading rusher this year?
Third leading rusher this year.
Yeah, because I think everyone says Jafar Armstrong for first, and then maybe you want to say Tony Jones Jr. or Ian Book for second. But who's third?
Yeah, I would probably say Book for third. I would say probably Jones is second, although I think I do like what Jameer Smith can bring to the offense. Yeah, I'm just not sure how many opportunities there'll be, but I think – Book will just be able, obviously, have a lot more opportunities to run, and maybe not be, maybe be in a better position to utilize his legs this coming season. So, I think that's probably the safer bet put Book at number three. But I do think there's a really good chance that Jameer Smith is that guy.
So you had listed Kyren Williams as your freshman surprise. So where does he fall in kind of this in your mind? Where does he fall? Where does he end 2019?
Yeah, I think he can find a role as kind of a Swiss Army knife guy. I think he can do some stuff out of the slot for them and maybe do some jet sweep situations. I think they like Lawrence Keys to maybe do some of that too, but I think he could find a role there. And I think it was just honestly, it was really hard to pick a freshman surprise because a lot of the guys that you think will play this year, it's pretty obvious. And then after that, it's a lot of guys that have a lot of people ahead of them. So I just like Kyren as a player, and I like his upside. I'm not positive that it will actually see it this year, but I think there's a chance that he could, if he gets that opportunity, that he would be successful at it.
I have a legit question that you could probably shed some light on, because I don't recall seeing it in the spring game, and I thinking about it a couple times this week. I never went back to pay attention. But last year Notre Dame used Brock Wright in an H-back role.
Right.
I'll just say fullback.
It was a fullback.
Yeah, thank God. So, you know, as in a fullback role, does Tommy Tremble move to that role now, or is Brock going to stick there? And I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. No,
you're saying like a rotation, or is that something that Brock has learned and that's just going to be an expanded part of the offense? I mean, not expanded in the ways like it's a huge part, but now that, you know, now that he's been practicing it more and more and more, they can use it a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember us seeing a lot of goal line offense in the spring. And so I'd be curious to see. I think they're more comfortable with Brock on the line of scrimmage now as an actual tight end. So I would think that they'd want to keep him there. But
so the chances of moving Trumbull to that role would you probably think would be increased, right?
Yeah, I think it would be. But I'm not sure how good of a blocker Tommy will be from that position, because they got to be able to run the ball from that.
He's
from
got that guns, formation. Man. If that guy can't block, then I'm a dead person.
Yeah, it's just not easy. I think I talked to Brock about that this past spring, of how hard that was. It's such a big guy to be able to. I mean, fullbacks aren't big guys. They're short, squatty dudes that can get under people. And so when you're a big tight end, that's not an easy task to be coming from that position and blocking guys as you're moving and those guys running at you full speed. So it'll be interesting to see. I wonder if we see maybe less of that formation. I do think there may be some H-back opportunities for Tommy Trumbull out of like a shotgun formation, and maybe him utilizing him that way. I'm less certain that he would maybe fill that fullback role. I don't know what they would do there, if they would keep Brock back there, or maybe George Takis can do it. I'm not really sure what they would do.
See, my personal opinion is that we need a fullback every year. Like, go recruit one and have one for 4 years. Just some psycho that's your one job, man. Like, you want a scholarship, come be our lunatic fullback. But if they're not going to do that, you know, I guess that I'd be more comfortable with a guy back there with more of a running back number. It's silly and stupid. It's silly and stupid. It doesn't make sense.
So since Brock Wright
was number 9 or number 8 rather than 89, I would have my chest would stick out a little farther with a sense of pride. So
Trumbull does look kind of funny wearing the number 24 at tight end. So maybe he'd look more natural at the fullback position. I think
he's
it would be.
He's cut. That kid is a physical specimen.
I'd be interested to see if maybe they try Tony Jones and Jameer Smith. Why not put a running back there that's not afraid to block someone? If those guys can catch Will out of the backfield, I think they could do similar things to what Brock Wright would do. I think Brock Wright is a very good blocker, so that is the biggest challenge of that.
Well, one of my favorite things from last year happened in the worst uniforms imaginable. You know, in New York, they were running out of a two-back set. And they literally ran a 31 fullback trap with Jafar Armstrong. I watched that video on loop like at least once a week. It's one of the prettiest plays that Notre Dame ran all season long.
Yeah, that was walk-in.
Legitimate. I mean, it was amazing. They haven't run anything like that in a few years. Hell, maybe longer. And it was so gorgeous to watch in those ugly, ridiculous uniforms. And you know, you remember last year they kept talking about like two backs, but it was never like the stars were never lining up for who was healthy and who was going to be back there.
Right.
So maybe this year, maybe that's something we see a little bit more. Chip Long seemed to have alluded to that in the few times that he's able to talk to the media. Do you feel that could become a bigger part of Notre Dame's offense this year?
I think so. And I don't think Chip Long's – I think Chip Long is not afraid to experiment with those different things and give defenses different looks and keep them on their toes. So I think you could see that. I think it's kind of tough. You don't want to take – you kind of have to figure out who's you're going to take off the field. Are you going to take a tight end off the field, or are you going to take a slot receiver off the field? So you have to kind of pick your spots there. But if, like I mentioned, if they're comfortable with playing two receivers at times, where maybe it's just Claypool and Fink or Claypool and Young – and then you have two running backs in there, and those guys, even Jafar can play in the slot if he needs to. He's certainly a very good receiver. That's what he played in high school. So I think that it gives the offense a lot of different more options, give the defense more to think about, and keep an eye on who's aligning where, because it could be guys that you're not expecting in certain places and that could be getting the ball at times you wouldn't expect them to get the ball.
Tyler, you said, or not you, but Julian Aquara said that his stated goal for sacks this year is 18.5. And as you mentioned in the article, not only would 18.5 be well over the most sacks in a season by an Notre Dame player, but it actually would have led FBS last year for number of sacks, because I think that the top person had 17.5. So I want to have that number and put the over under at 9.5 sacks. Where are you taking Julian Aquara next year?
Over 9.5, easy. That's okay. An easy one. I don't know that he's going to get to 18.5. I would probably
think he'll break Tuck's record this year.
He can go to 13.5. Yeah, Tuck's record.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I would maybe. It seems kind of crazy to set the over under at what the record is, but I think that seems more like a reason. Reasonable might not be the right word, but maybe somewhat realistic projection of what he can do this season. They are insistent on how many sacks he missed last year. If he would have just done one little thing different, he got his hands on a quarterback but didn't bring him down. And you just got to think that he's going to be better at doing that. Certainly, there's a more there's more of a likelihood that teams are going to prevent him from getting in those situations. They're going to double him more, but
by holding more.
Yeah, and holding more. But Notre Dame has other options on the defensive line to create pressure. So I even think other guys creating pressure could help Julian Aquara too, because if Collins creating pressure on the right side, then Julian's on the left side. The quarterback tries to come out that way, and Julian gets an easy sack. So I think together they're all going to increase each other's sack numbers because there's going to be more pressure. I'm curious to see how they split the playing time with Dalen Hayes and Julian Aquara. Julian didn't play consistently as like the full-time number one guy last year. He rotated a lot with Dalen Hayes. So I think he'll have – I would imagine he has somewhat of an increased role in terms of playing time. So, I think he's going to – I wouldn't be surprised, although I guess I would probably predict even that he does break the single season sack record for Notre Dame. So
I mean, I think if he gets 18 and a half sacks, you got to think of him as a top 10 NFL draft pick next
top year. Five.
Right. Yeah. That's
a Josh Allen type, basically.
Yeah. Right? That number is insane, especially guys put up crazy numbers sometimes at smaller schools or.
But, like Louisiana Tech?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like last year, Jalen Ferguson, is that his name, I believe?
Yeah. Jalen Ferguson.
Ed
Oliver.
But Julian, and I think Jalen Ferguson was like undersized because I don't think he got drafted very high. People were kind of worried about his speed and stuff like that. But Julian Aquara is, when you look at it, you're like, oh man, that is a NFL defensive end. But then if he puts up those kinds of numbers, you think, well, what do you have questions about then? If he's able to produce like that, he's got to be a guy that would be highly coveted in the NFL draft.
Yeah, my first recollection of Julian Aquara was jumping up in the quarterback's face against UNC, I think it was 2017, and batting the ball to himself and like intercepting the pass. I'm like, oh, this is a real dude right here.
I think the first time I saw him in person up close, I was like standing behind him actually at a Chipotle, and I was like, man, Julian, he's a big dude, man. And obviously he's filled out more physically since when early on in his career at Notre Dame. And it is thicker, and he doesn't love getting asked about his weight all the time. As I mentioned the story, he kind of laughs at it, how he, almost any time he's made available to the media, he gets asked about what his weight is and if he feels strong enough and stuff like that. But he's definitely continuing to grow, and he's an impressive guy. He's one of those guys you put out at the front of the bus that walks out the bus first when you go to a road venue.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that set Twitter, I mean, one of the many things that sets Twitter up in arms was during just about every game, you could do screenshots of either Kareem or Hayes or Aquara getting absolutely, you know, just murdered, just hell bigger than, you know, anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the no calls. I mean, just the absolute no calls on it. And I thought it was funny. I was on there. I can't remember maybe it was after the Stanford game. I can't quite recall, but I had kind of joined in the mob there about it. And it was Khalid Kareem's dad jumped in and was like, no, we're going to work on that. He's like, that's his fault. Like, how is him getting held? You know, I just kind of thought that was let me get your thoughts on that. On one of my favorite things is, you know, and they're not long conversations at all, but either on Twitter or in person after the game is talking to the parents for just a few minutes. And what's your take on some of Notre Dame's you know, the parents of these guys? Do you have a favorite from the past or someone now? And you know, Eric Hansen did that great story about you know, Dexter Williams. Our photographer Michael Miller got some really great shots after that Stanford game of Dexter over there with his mom. Do you have any favorites or kind of, you know, funny things that you're willing to share?
I'm trying to think. Nothing really jumps to mind. I enjoy getting to them. Certainly when I was covering recruiting, you'd get to know them pretty early on in the recruiting process. And some parents are very involved in their kids' recruitment when it comes to media and stuff like that. And some parents are certainly out of the picture and let the kids take care of everything. They're not as concerned about that. But I really enjoyed getting to know some parents. I liked Ade Adamolola, the father of Jason and Justin.
He just jumped in the fray this week.
He's
right?
A good guy. He's not afraid to let his opinion be heard.
He is very solid.
He was always asking to for feedback on how if we're at a spring practice, how are his kids looking and stuff like that. And I last year for our magazine, I did a story on Jamion Franklin and his dad James, who was battling cancer. And that was really neat to get to talk to him about that. He was a little shy about being like the focus of the story, but he was able to send me some. We exchanged some text messages back and forth for that, and he's certainly very proud of Jamion, and certainly their connection is really really unique and special. I liked trying to think of some other parents that I've gotten along with. Well, the Mustafers were great to me. I did a pretty big story on Sam around senior day, I believe, and got to talk to them for a bit. And I actually ended up, they were from the Baltimore area, and they were taking a train up to the game in New York. And my flight into Newark ended up getting canceled. So I had to fly to Baltimore and take the train up to Newark. So we were actually waiting in the same train station to go there. So you kind of run into some parents on the road. I ran into Justin Yoon's dad a couple times, waiting for connecting flights, throughout the years.
There's another guy with strong opinions.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. And some parents don't want to be noticed. They don't want you to even know who they are. And some parents like to come up and talk to you and kind of pick your ear too. So it's kind of fun to get to know them and kind of watch them, and see how they kind of view things through their eyes. Cause obviously it's a lot more stressful for them than it is for us reporters. Whatever happens isn't going to impact our lives in great ways, but it certainly can for them.
Now, you spoke about meeting these people on traveling, like kind of a weight. And then about last year your own kind of fatigue after the season. And that sure was a lot that we wrote about last year, leading into it was like, dear Lord, there's a lot of travel. And my personal opinion is that USC game was kind of the result of all that travel leading up. I mean, that's just a lot to ask, ask these guys to do throughout the year. And that last trip out to LA, you can tell why they were, looked sluggish. This year's schedule though, not nearly as much travel. But it's got its own pitfalls here and there. Obviously traveling to Athens, I guess traveling to Ann Arbor, maybe, presents kind of an issue. Where are the pitfalls in the schedule? And I'm not really asking for the trap game, per se, but when you look at the schedule from start to finish, where are those games that aren't necessarily traps, but we're gonna see some struggling?
Yeah, I think obviously playing Virginia Tech the week after the Michigan game, I think that's certainly not going to be an easy one.
That was the one I was hoping you'd say right away.
I always think senior day is always a tough situation just because there's lots of emotions going on, and Boston College isn't going to roll over or anything like that. I think that's a team that will like to give Notre Dame a challenge, and certainly A.J. Dillon has some Notre Dame history, being the grandson of Tom Gatewood, and Notre Dame essentially kind of passed on him at running back.
Hammond isn't on the call, because that's the only thing you'd hear the whole game.
And then certainly playing against Virginia the week after Georgia is not going to be easy either. I think Virginia has some very talented players. And so I think they're an improving program, and getting a win at Notre Dame would certainly be a big moment in Virginia football. So I think all those games are probably the ones that I would be maybe the most concerned about, is games that you don't necessarily look at as, okay, those are marquee games, but those are going to be tough games, and they're in tough sort of situations for Notre Dame to rebound from the previous week or what's going on that week.
And you're on record now that you think Notre Dame's going to struggle up in Ann Arbor.
But like you mentioned, since I did the prediction, or since I did the opponent previews, I had to do a score prediction for every game there. We always do all of us give a season prediction. So I went 10-2. And if I didn't do these, or I didn't tell you that I did these opponent previews, you wouldn't know that I thought the second loss was going to be Michigan. But
can you explain to me, and this has been, kind of one of the lead topics for the online Notre Dame community.
Sure.
Can you explain to me what the hell with Michigan? Phil Steele's rankings aside, because Phil does kind of a projection thing rather than like where they're at going into the season. Mm-hmm. And he has Michigan at number 3. So obviously he has them going to the playoffs, which just seems silly to me. But can you explain like how much love they're getting after losing so much? They're not really gaining anything on their – I mean, I understand a new offensive coordinator in Josh Gattis, but they lost so much off of their biggest strength. So how are people so comfortable in saying, oh, yeah, that's a top – that's definitely a top 10 team or in some cases a top 5 team?
Yeah, to me, I think first with the Phil Steele thing with him at 3, I actually put Michigan as one of my playoff teams in our prediction section because
we
had – so to me, it's there's 3 that are in. It's Georgia, Clemson, and Alabama. And I don't love the Pac-12 team. I don't necessarily think that Oklahoma is going to be as good. And then –
Ohio State.
To me, it's like yeah, it just seems like is Ohio State's reign over now that Urban Meyer's gone, and so I kind of took a flyer on Michigan there. Certainly, I don't think it's like necessarily probable. I think they're the least likely of those teams by far. Their schedule sets up nicely, and I think from my understanding, Phil Steele's predictions are based off of how they'll finish, not necessarily how he ranks them going into the season. So, and that's obviously what I'm doing with the playoff projection. The schedule just kind of sets up nicely for them with playing some of their toughest opponents at home. And I think certainly the Big House isn't the toughest place in America to play, but I think Michigan traditionally plays well there. Notre Dame doesn't always play very well there. And sometimes trends like that, historical trends, are kind of silly and don't have much credence. But I just think that Michigan is going to continue to improve. And I think there's a chance that they're very good. And I think their defensive coordinator, Don Brown, is going to make a good defense, even though they lost a lot of talent and there probably isn't as much talent on that team. I think they're still going to be a good defense. I am interested to see what the offense looks like. I feel like they were kind of a confused mess last year. Didn't really know what they were going to be. Jim Harbaugh is going hands off. That's worked for Brian Kelly when it comes to Notre Dame's offense. So is Josh Gattis Michigan's Chip Long? We'll see. So I'm interested to see how that plays out. Certainly it could fail spectacularly, and I wouldn't be terribly surprised. But I think when you're looking at trying to figure out where does Notre Dame's losses come, I felt more confident in pinning a loss against Michigan on the road than even some of those games that I mentioned previously of tough situations where Notre Dame's playing at home against some teams that maybe better than you would kind of associate those teams with normally.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't hear anything you said because I just slammed like three tall boys at Pabst right now. What are you doing to me, Tyler?
Hey, you asked the question, not me.
You talk about trends, and there's actually a lot of trends coming into that Michigan game. I mean, you mentioned one of them. Brian Kelly's record against top 25 teams on the road is atrocious, but Brian Kelly's record coming off of byes is excellent. And mm-hmm. I think those two things are in play. I also think that playing at, I think it's at Penn State the week prior to Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely played Penn State. I don't recall if it was home or away. Well, Notre Dame is on a bye, has to be considered advantageous to Notre Dame. I'm with you. I fear the Michigan game just because I think Michigan is the fan base that I like the least.
Oh, yeah, that's clear. I think everyone knows that most Notre Dame fans feel that way.
Yeah, but I actually thought we were going to be worried more. I thought at the beginning of 2018, I thought going into 2019, we'd be worried more about Amon-Ra St. Brown and USC and touchdowns from JT Daniels and stuff like that. And they seem much more of a mess, which I just it boggles my mind that USC isn't being talked about.
We haven't talked about USC, and I can't tell you how. I mean, how many? We do one or two podcasts a week, and even writing and all that. USC just has not been mentioned, and up till tonight, we're 53, almost 54 minutes in, and that's the first mention of USC by any party here. Yeah. What I mean, how insane is that?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I predicted Notre Dame to win by 7. Certainly, obviously, these score predictions are me picking numbers out of a hat mostly. But I think USC is going to be able to put up points. I'm not really sure about their defense. I think their offense will get better. And I think Amon-Ra St. Brown is a great talent. I think JT Daniels will play better than he did last season. But yeah, I don't know what's going to happen to their season. Certainly, I expect them to play up well like they did against Notre Dame last season. I just think that Notre Dame should be able to beat them in terms of scoring more points. But I think that it's going to be fun to watch what happens out there for them, because I think it could certainly go wrong pretty quick, because they have a very pretty tough opening to the schedule with Utah, Washington, and Notre Dame among their first six games of the season.
Wow.
Wow. All right, guys, we're getting close to wrapping this up, but before we do that, Tyler, you're going to have to defend the honor of the South Bend Tribune.
Oh boy.
in a kind of a strange way, I'm going to need your worst hot take on food. Food hot take.
Like, what would you defend in a weird way that like everyone would be like, "You're crazy, Tyler."
Oh boy. Man,
is there a restaurant that you love in South Bend that everyone thinks is trash, or?
Oh, well, oh boy. Okay. This isn't South Bend related, but I do not get the In-N-Out hype. I don't think it's bad. I'm not going to trash In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Their burgers are fine. What is trash are their French fries. Those are a disgrace to the French fry name. So
Tyler, is it just people haven't tried Five Guys? I keep wondering like why everyone thinks In-N-Out.
Well, Five Guys got to take out a loan.
In-N-Out's kind of cool. I think everyone likes the old like
$80.
It's kind of like the old diner feel. In-N-Out is a very cool kind of aesthetic, and I think it's just kind of the hip thing. The burger is good. It's not like it's not bad. I wouldn't say that, but it's not like, oh my gosh, I have to get In-N-Out the minute I land in California. I don't know that I feel that way. And I know Carter feels that way about Whataburger, though he would say Whataburger for some weird reason. but I think Whataburger is fine. But to me, I always make fun of him because he's always like, well, you got to try this. And what he recommends isn't a burger. And so I don't why are you telling me it's a better burger place if you're not recommending the burger to me? So I think some of those chains are a little more I think it's just a regional thing that people love when they're growing up and get attached to. I don't really know that.
I mean, do you feel strongly about Steak and Shake?
No, Steak and Shake's fine.
Frisco is amazing.
It's fine. Yeah. That's the Frisco Melt would be what I would go with, but I don't eat there often. That was usually a late night kind of college food thing, but I don't feel as strongly. I know a former member of the Beat, Nick Ironside, was a very big Steak and Shake fan. He would eat there frequently, and he wasn't from the area, so he thought it was an amazing thing, but.
So what is your I just got out of work at 10:30 and I haven't eaten anything in the last 7 hours, sort of like stop. Where are you going?
Well, lately it's Portillo's. We have been blessed with the Portillo's here as of a year plus. I think it was last spring.
And it's not getting one.
It's not far from where I live either, so that is even worse. So it's very convenient. It's very convenient to head over to Portillo's to get food late at night, and they're open relatively late compared to a lot of places. I think they're meant to be open to like midnight, which you don't necessarily always get for some quality food like that. So I like Portillo's. There's a lots of different local restaurants. It's funny. I know Carter was ripping on the barbecue. He doesn't think we have good barbecue here, which I'm not going to give him too much grief against that. I think we don't have great barbecue, but he went to Frankie's, which is probably the in-town place that I would recommend for barbecue. And he got something. I don't even remember what he got, but I was like, why did you get that? That's not what they're known for. You got to get the rib tips. That's what you get at Frankie's. And he's like, I don't know. That's what we get at places in Texas. I was like, well, this isn't Texas. You got to get what they do best. It's like, you can't just go in there blind. And so he's got some learning to do. The best barbecue in the area is Greenbush up in Sawyer, Michigan, which is a little bit of a hike, 30, 40 minutes, but it has excellent barbecue. So I don't know that we've taken him up there yet. I think every time I've gone up there, he hasn't been able to come with me, but I'll have to take him up there to see what he thinks about that.
One of my takes that I've been like cultivating and kind of analyzing and putting out there, and I've been getting a lot of trash for it, is that I've said that Culver's is basically upscale White Castle. Think about it.
What?
Think about it.
I like both of those restaurants, and I don't get it.
Okay. Look, first the colors. It is the same blue on white. All right.
So we're talking about the food here, Josh. Come on.
You know, you got 3-inch bulletproof glass at White Castle. You have table service at Culver's. You have tiny burgers steamed at White Castle. You have these giant butter burgers at Culver's. But the fries are the same. The menu is vast, just like at White Castle, who has the best chicken rings in the business, tater tots, mini corn dogs. I mean, it's fantastic. and you have the best. I mean, White Castle probably has the best Coke around. I mean, there's no other Coke machine to produce that quality of taste like a White Castle.
See, I love root beer. Culver's is great root beer.
Just a step up from White Castle in kind of a style sense. Yeah. Are you buying it? I'm on the front lines pushing this.
When you said Culver's is a step up in every way, I bought more of that than I don't remember what your first initial the way you phrased it was. I didn't know.
Basically an upscale White Castle.
Upscale White Castle.
Yeah. To me, that means they're serving mostly the same stuff but fancier. But I don't know that I would totally buy it just because I mean you're talking about sliders versus burgers and. Also, I don't know if you've had the chicken tenders at Culver's. I would take those over the chicken rings at White Castle. But
oh my god, looking up Carter Carl's Skype number. All right,
hey, I got one more food related question. I love.
Oh, go ahead.
You did a profile about Mike Elston in the ND Insider magazine. I just wondered if you have had Beth Elston's cookies and are they actually good?
I have not had them yet, and
nobody's had them. Carter didn't have them either.
I think. Maybe we need to exchange some cookies for a few copies of the magazine or something. Maybe we'll see if we can work something out there. We got to get our hands on some of those cookies.
I mean, we've been talking about Beth Elston's cookies for quite a while now. We can't.
She's probably going to tell you you're going to have to get out there and get a sack. Like,
I can't trust the players. The players are going to say that they're good. What else are they going to say? Right?
Yeah.
These are shit cookies.
Julian seemed pretty into them and. It was kind of funny because we were talking about him, his sack goal with 18 and a half. I said, and we were talking about his weight a little bit. And I said, well, you don't have to worry about adding weight if you get 18 and a half sacks. That's a lot of cookies.
When you're at college, you will eat anything that's delivered
right.
to you.
Yeah.
And absolutely. It's the best. Like, oh my God, you brought me food. You are the fifth. You are the greatest. All right. Well, hey, we're going to close this out. Jude, you got anything to take us out with at all?
No, I have nothing except just a reiteration that ND Insider, not only the magazine but the annual subscription. I believe I paid less than $99 this year. I think I got some sort of discount. Whatever I paid for, it's worth the money. I love reading the stuff that's behind the paywall. I think it's worth it. Tyler does some stuff in season that the data nerd in me like really loves. Where he talks about pressures and like offensive line kind of goes beyond the box score. I can't say enough good things. If you're just thinking about where to put your money and you have a limited funds to put towards, you know, recruiting analysis and kind of beyond the box score stuff and some sort of human interest stuff, I would put it towards ND Insider. I'm a big fan. I've been a subscriber for, I think, 3 years now, and I don't foresee ending that anytime soon. So that's my big plug for those guys and the work that they do.
Absolutely. Hey, this is the local newspaper. Support your local newspapers. These are the guys that are doing all the work. I just, I can't say enough for what these guys do day in and day out during the season. Like, Tyler's going to take, like, the entire month off of July just to prep for the season. So get on that. One thing I have for you, like, man, I can't get this out of my head. So maybe football isn't all that important, you guys. Maybe it's not the biggest thing in the world because you know what just happened? A 41,000-year-old nematode, which is a half millimeter long worm, wiggled. They brought that thing out of the cold, out of the Arctic soil, and they brought it back to like 41,000 years old. It was in the National Post just the other day. I can't think about anything else, but the thing was
is that a parallel for Notre Dame reigniting its historic past, or
Fighting nematodes? it could be a thing.
Is Newt Rockne next?
I mean, someone break up, would you? So I had to put that out there somewhere. I couldn't get it out of my head. My kids are looking at me like I'm crazy. I got them scared about zombies now because we went really deep into the nematode thing and how old it is. But yeah, Tyler, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everybody, go out there and get that magazine. We're going to have links up on, like I said, on the podcast notes and up on the site. We've already did a story on it. I'm always impressed with it. It's from top to bottom. It's the best thing that's out there. It's way more in depth. You're going to get with any national magazine, and it's the best one that anyone that covers Notre Dame does. That's why I don't do, I don't even try to touch it. So check that out. Tyler, do you got anything to say before you leave?
No, I don't know that I can say anything better than what, all the praise you guys heaped on us. So I appreciate the kind words, and we certainly appreciate you guys' support. And we are glad that you guys value that. And certainly the readers are the reason we put all this time and effort into this, because we know people have the appetites for it. And so we want to make sure that they can get that. So we appreciate all the support, and whether it's buying a magazine or buying a monthly or annual subscription to Indy Insider, we're definitely grateful for everyone that is willing to spend their time and money reading and consuming what we have to put out there.
All right, Fanta. And I, again, thank you so much. And I am to repay my thanks for you guys' hard work, I'm going to teach you how to roll out a burrito. We're gonna get you there. So thanks again, you guys, and we'll have more on One Foot Down all week long. So check it out. Go Irish.